Translation. Dhritarashtra said, O Sanjaya, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do? Purport. Bhagavad Gita is the widely read theistic science summarized in the Gita Mahatmya, glorification of the Gita. There it is said that one should read the Bhagavad Gita very scrutinizingly with the help of a person who is a devotee of Sri Krishna and try to understand it without personally motivated interpretations. The example of clear understanding is there in the Bhagavad Gita itself, in the way the teaching is understood by Arjuna, who heard the Gita directly from the Lord. If someone is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita in that line of disciplic succession without motivated interpretation, then he surpasses all studies of Vedic wisdom and all scriptures of the world. One will find in the Bhagavad Gita all that is contained in other scriptures, but the reader will also find things which are not to be found elsewhere. That is the specific standard of the Gita. It is the perfect theistic science because it is directly spoken by the Supreme Personality of God, Lord Sri Krishna. No problem. Anyway, koi baat nahi. There are so many translations of Bhagavad Gita available in the shops that if one is looking, there is no limit. And amongst all these different translations, there are many interpretations also. Some even by quite famous translators. Like Krishna, he says in Bhagavad Gita, Manmana bhava mat paktu madhyaji mam namaskuru mam eva shaisi satyam te. He's explaining that just bow down to me and fix your mind upon me. So then one scholar made a translation of the Bhagavad Gita and says, that me, that doesn't mean me. It means the impersonal feature of the Lord within that me. So, well, this is looking for some explanation. This is twisting the words of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord clearly said, Man mana bhavat mat paktu, just surrender unto me. And then some translator is turning it all around to say, no, he says me, but he doesn't mean me. Like what we call this kind of talking, we call this fast talking nowadays. If anyone would do that to us, we would not appreciate that very much. When I say, give it to me, and someone says, no, he doesn't mean give it to him. He means actually that it should be given to the impersonal feature, that means to all, or something like that. We are all that. So in this way, there are many motivations of the Bhagavad Gita. One dentist in Bombay was saying that Krishna is like a dentist and Arjuna is like a patient. And in this way, he was using the Bhagavad Gita. But to compare Krishna to a dentist is a bit much, isn't it? I mean, Krishna plays his flute very nicely. And I mean, the musical instrument of the dentist is not my favorite. I don't know what others think about it. But I myself, I avoid it as much as possible, that dental music. Right? And the patient is singing along with the instrument. I'd rather hear the flute of Krishna. So in this way, the Bhagavad Gita is meant to be taken as it is. It is not meant to be changed. In Sanskrit, there are two ways of understanding a text. One is called Mukhya Vritti and the other one is called Gona Vritti. So Mukhya Vritti means that we are taking the words directly as to what they mean, as they are. We do not try to find any hidden meaning, we just take the words and we take the meaning. And Gona Vritti, it is an indirect interpretation. So by the rules of Sanskrit, it is actually not allowed to do indirect interpretation if one, by direct interpretation of the text, gets a clear meaning, then one should accept that. But if direct interpretation doesn't make sense, then sometimes one is allowed to do the indirect interpretation. So, in this way, the scholars are, however, taking all kinds of indirect meanings out of the Bhagavad Gita and not take it as it is. Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. Aham means I. It is I. I am the source of everything. Everything that exists. That is me. I, Krishna says. And again, he says, no, that's not Krishna. No. You must see that actually that form of Krishna, behind it, there is the impersonal feature of the Lord, and they say that is the origin of it all. But Krishna rejects that also. Krishna says that avyaktam vyaktim apanam manyante mam abhudaya. Those who think that the vyakta, or the personal form of Krishna, comes from the avyakta, the impersonal, unmanifest, etc., those are abhudaya, less intelligent. So, like this, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is defeating the idea that the Supreme Lord would, or the Absolute Truth, would be an impersonal, all-pervading energy. Rather, Krishna says, yes, Brahmano pratistaham, that impersonal energy exists. Everything is spiritual. When Prabhupada was in a discussion with Allen Ginsberg, Allen Ginsberg was saying that in many of the world religions, they have a big problem with the worship of the statues. Why are you worshipping the statues? Because the statues are made of matter. They are made of stone. So, how can you worship a stone statue as God? How can you do this? Right? How can you do this? This is just made of stone. Just some image, and you are all falling down on the ground like that, making big offerings and this, that. Why? How can you do this? So he was arguing like this. He said, how can you do this with a statue that is just made of some matter, of stone, just of matter? Prabhupada said, no, matter does not exist. Actually, there is no matter. It is only an idea that there is matter. But everything that is here is finding its origin in the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. It is Krishna's energy, not ours. Nobody made this world. Is there anyone who made the world? Is there any man who can say, I made Australia, the original Australian who made it? Is he there? No. Some people went sailing around the world and they bumped into Australia. That's how they found. And, they found some people there already, actually. And so like that, no one can claim that they have made the material energy other than the Supreme Lord. It is the energy of Krishna. So therefore everything is Krishna. So the stone of the statue is also Krishna's energy. And that form is carved not just by some artist who was thinking, well, what shall I carve today? Like the famous artists here in Australia who are making different works of art, right? Or all over the world, you have them, you know, like take a blob of paint and just like throw it on, right? Or, you know, like some artists suggested to go with a plane over Ayers Rock and just throw big bombardments of paint on the rock and then turn it into an Australian work of art. So, and that would of course make it very famous, even more than it is now, because that's modern art. And it doesn't matter, anyone can see in it what he wants to see. That's modern art. But this is not the way that the Lord, the form of the Lord is created. It is not whimsical. The form of the deity is carved according to the directions of the scriptures. And those very scriptures are revealed by the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the form of the deities are following the directions of the scriptures, and then Krishna enters within that very deity form. He manifests himself. Therefore, Krishna is present. Devotees understand like that. So, we also understand that the words of Bhagavad Gita are the words of the Supreme Lord. These are not ordinary words. These are timeless words. These are words that are not only relevant 5,000 years ago, but are still relevant today. So they are as relevant for us as they were for Arjuna. And in fact, what Arjuna was going through in the Bhagavad Gita is exactly what we are also going through. Because everyone has his battle to fight. Arjuna had a battle in Kurukshetra. Some fight a battle at home. And here is the vase that your mother gave us for the marriage, right? No, you broke it. Well, what are you going to do about it? Well, that painting, right, from your uncle, that expensive painting. Anyway, like that, the battles can take place at times with flying furniture, or it is space wars with flying saucers, whatever it may be, whether it is at home or whether it is in the universe. On all levels, there are wars going on. We may look at the beautiful lawn, and the daisies are there, and the butterflies, and they're all just flying around, and it just looks so sweet and so romantic and so nice, and you just think like, oh, let's enjoy a little bit, and the bees begin to sing in the background, enjoy, and let's have a picnic, not too many bees, of course, just a few, and like that. We think it's wonderful, but if you would have a magnifying glass, you would see that right there in the grass, it's the Battle of Kurukshetra. Right? The ants are fighting a big war. One is just walking off with the leg of another. They're dressed up like tanks. Right? It's a total war field down there. That nice, peaceful lawn where we are having our picnic. If you have to start thinking like that, you get depressed, don't you? God, you know, even the picnic is Kurukshetra. Oh, it is all right. We can also appreciate. It is tonight. We're gonna do it. Tonight is the night. Right? Okay. So, like this, they think that life is exciting and wonderful, and this world is a beautiful place. It's beautiful. It's great. It's a great place. Wonderful. Great. You know. But then, what's that clinic for skin cancer doing there? And don't look at it. Man. What's that advertisement about AIDS, you know, like just on the toilet door? Don't read it. And what are all these things all about, you know? And what does it say? Use clean needles. Who's using needles anyway? I don't like needles, right? Why do they have those strange purple lights in the station, right? So that no one in the bathroom can... Oh, God. You know, why do people do such things, you know, if it's all enjoy? Yes, because it's hard to get satisfaction. It's very difficult. We try, but some feeling of emptiness remains, or sometimes when everything seems great, in the middle of it all, it just goes wrong. One man bought a was in South Africa, of course, brought a brand new Honda Ballot for his wife, spent all the money he could, right, and didn't have any money left for the insurance. First day it got stolen. All he had left was the key. Daily in his lunch break, he would go on the parking lots and try all the Honda ballots to see if the key would fit, you know. Yes, that's life. That can happen. And so there are so many stories of things that can happen. Therefore, it is said by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that actually nobody in this world is a success. We're just, everyone's in showbiz and keeping it up for the neighbors, you know. Hi. Smile, the neighbors. Right. Yes. Oh yes, we are the most successful people in the streets. That's us, you know. We got the biggest house, the biggest car, we got it all, you know. And then when the curtains close, you know, we can finally drop our masks, you know, and show our real faces. We are miserable. We are bored. We are not happy. We are sick of it all. But, you know, there's only one thing we like, and that is to show to the neighbors. Hi. And like that, it's all pretense. Actually, if we are honest, right, no one in this world is successful. No one. Not in Hollywood, Bollywood, or in any place in this world. There's no such thing. Nowhere in the woods, you know. Once we are in the woods here in the material world, we get lost on the way. And we try to make the best out of it. My father used to tell me a thing that I really hated. He said, son, when he started like that, son, I was already like, yeah. Son, life is a compromise. Maybe for you it is, but not for me, right? And still, this very day, I could say the same thing. Of course, my father has expired, but if he was here, I would still say the same. Not a compromise for me, oh no, right? It's, we are going to go all the way. We don't want to keep up a show of we're so happy doing the same thing every week. We're so happy Saturday night and it's a party. The same jokes like last Saturday night, right? Doing the same things, right? And it's just the same old boring games. But anyway, we try and get intoxicated again and then, you know, enjoy it. And then on Sunday, have a hangover like that, right? So, material life is like that. A little bit of fleeting enjoyment, but never enough to fully satisfy. So, Bhagavad Gita is explaining this is the karmi. The karmi who is looking in this world. But you say, but some people are enjoying. Yes, they are. But later on they get the bill, the karma bill. Just like when you go to a restaurant, right? In some restaurants, they serve at the table. And they serve in small quantities, you know? So you sit there, and while you're eating, you're still hungry. You've ordered this, you've ordered that, but it's not, like, enough. Yeah? So you order a little more, and you order a little more, and in the end, you just don't know what you've had anymore. And then the waiter comes with the bill, and you get a shock of your life. And you say, we never had all that. No, 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 we didn't have that. And he says, yes, you did. Here is the empty plate. See? And here's that. And so, it is in the same way with karma. We say, but I never did that. I didn't do that. Yes, we did. We did. But we forgot. We forgot. We forgot so many things that we have done, right, throughout. And even unknowingly. Unknowingly. Get involved in karma. We even the insects we step on, right? Boom, boom, boom. So many insects are being crushed. Right? Even for those we pay, or the ones we've sprayed. Even the mosquitoes, right? Or the roaches, or all the other creatures, right? Yes. Even. The vegetables that we eat and that have been sprayed with pesticides, we share in the responsibility for that. Not only the guys that spray them, but we also get the karma. Yes. So, while we are trying to enjoy, we actually get caught up in a network of karma. So this is, and it sometimes happens to us, no matter what we do. We can't enjoy it, no matter how hard we work. So this is the life of karma. So the jnani, he has knowledge. He understands this. He sees the workings of karma. He sees how this world is not just such a beautiful place for enjoyment. He sees that there is always misery in this world. Misery caused by one's own body, misery caused by the mind, misery caused by other living beings, misery caused by the weather or natural circumstances. He sees this is there. So the jnani says, no, I want to get out of this world. The karmi says, I want to enjoy this world. The jnani says, oh no, 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 I want to get out of this world. This world is full of pain and suffering. Right? A devotee, he says neither. A devotee says, no, I'm not going to try and enjoy this world, nor am I going to try to escape from this world. A playboy saw a beautiful young girl, and naturally, he was very attracted to her. The hungry wolf saw that same young girl, and he was naturally also very attracted to her, but in a different way. The yogi, when he saw that girl, he went like, Maya, right? She is the illusory energy personified. You know, take her away. I don't want to see her. But the devotee was neither thinking that here is an object for my enjoyment, nor was he thinking that here is a girl that will entangle me in material life. A devotee is simply thinking, here is a spirit soul who is residing within a body, and let me somehow or other engage this spirit soul in serving Krishna, because that is the perfection of life for her, for Krishna, and for everyone. So this is really what it is all about. So there are, in the Vedas, there are different paths given. There is a path which is called Karma Kanda. So this Karma Kanda section of the Vedas means there are many sacrifices in the Vedas given, which are meant for improving our present condition of life. The Karma Kanda section of the Veda is given in the Dharma Shastra. The most important scripture that is giving us the directions for Karma Kanda is the Manu Samhita. So this Manu Samhita is very famous, and it is full of ritual. There are many rituals one can perform. And it says, if you have become entangled in one form of karma, you have done something bad, no problem. There you do a quick ritual to counteract this, and then everything is alright again. And in this way, people get involved in this karma kanda. So they think that this is spiritual life, but it is not. It is actually material life. Because by this karma kanda, we are actually trying to manipulate the material energy in our favor. Dhanam dehi, upavati dehi, upaparyam dehi, 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 dehi. All for my body. Give me wealth, give me health, give me beautiful wife, give me everything. That is the translation of what I was just saying. That they pray like that. They pray for all material benefits. So we reject this. This is materialism. Then we go to the Lord and we throw something on the altar and we throw 5 paisa in the hope to get 5 lakhs. This is business. Good business too. Where you have such business? It's a good profit if you calculate. So no. That is not actually Dharma. Krishna rejects that. Krishna is not interested in it. He says, sarva dharmam paricheya mam ekam saranam vraja. Give up all that dharma. Give it up. Stop that dharma now. Enough, he says. Just surrender unto me. And this is what Krishna desires. Surrender unto me. become my devotee, worship me with all your heart, with everything, totally. That is our aim. Not that we just spend our time and try to make material life as comfortable as possible. Whether you do it by working hard and trying to make so much money that you can arrange everything, or whether you do it through prayers, it's the same thing. Same thing. So that's not spiritual life. Spiritual life is not for that. Spiritual life is not, oh my dear Lord, please bless me that I may pass this exam, bless me that I may get this wife, you know. They come to us sometimes, Swamiji, can you do something that I will get a very beautiful wife? No, we cannot do anything for you. No, that's not our business. Our business is to offer devotional service to Krishna. Devotional service to Krishna is what can fully satisfy the soul. No matter how nice the material energy is, it will not satisfy. Even if you have the best house and the best family, right? If you have everything best, you still won't be satisfied. You still be wanting more and more and more and more. Okay? This is because it is said, the soul is spiritual and the body is material. So spirit and matter, it doesn't really mix. So when we enter in, when the soul enters into the material body, it does not really, it will never be at home in that material body. So therefore, it is just like oil and water. It doesn't mix. Oil stays on top of the water. It doesn't really mix. Right? The soul doesn't really mix with matter. And the soul is by nature inclined towards eternity, and matter is temporary. So the two don't mix. The soul wants eternity, and everything in this world is temporary. I remembered when I was a teenager, I had this real good shirt, you know, my favorite shirt. And then at one point, there was a little rip in the back, you know, my favorite shirt. Anyway, I didn't care. It still looked good in the front, you know. So, anyway, I was walking around, but having a great time. And then my mother, she sneaked up behind me and just ripped it off my back like that. Boy, oh boy. It brought me, I was like, you know, I almost killed her. It was difficult. Right? I really lost it there. My favorite shirt. But that's how it is in this material world. Everything is being destroyed. All our favorites don't last. Right. Oh yes. Yes, you wouldn't... if we just look back at our own picture in kindergarten, we wouldn't recognize the way we look now. Right? Yeah. There's this story of a movie, you know, which I've seen, and I like that movie very much, so... I've seen it many years ago, but I still remember it, and I sometimes tell that story. So I'll tell it to you now. The story is basically that some people went to a party, and they were all like Hollywood, you know, dressed up like a man and a woman, smoking. He had a smoking, she had like one of those night dresses on, you know. All shiny gold and this, that. And they came in, you know, she was a gorgeous blonde, right? And he had like, you know, big hair on his head, broad-shouldered, and, you know, healthy chest, etc. She had all the right measurements in the right places. Anyway, when they came in, they kicked their shoes off, and immediately he was a lot smaller because he had false soles in his shoes, you know. Then they both pulled their wigs off. He was bald like anything. She had miserable strands of hair. And then while she pulled off the long eyelashes, he took off his jacket with the shoulder fillings, right? And while he let his belly strap go, she let the air out of the balloons, right? And in this way, you know, in the end, these two old people were sitting in bed, and on the little table next to their bed, they had a glass of water with their teeth inside. That was the end. The end. Right? So, this is it. You know. This is what everyone's going to go through sooner or later. You can keep up the show, you know, put a little more power, right? But it won't do it, you know. Just hold your breath, you know, when the young girl walks by, right? Try and look slim, but as soon as she walks up, there it comes again. So in this way, gradually, with time, everything in this world is to be taken away. It's frustrating. Yeah? Even our youth, our strength, our beauty, our possessions, everything is just going away. And we're just sitting here watching it all. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita recommends, let's not get too attached to this world. Let's forget it. This is not home. Let us understand. Here, this is like a station. It is just like a railway station. We are only here temporary. Just is like a hotel room. Yeah? So when we're in a hotel room, we don't care, you know, like there may be some foolish painting on the wall anyway, you know. We're only here temporary. You're not going to change all the furniture all around. Some people do. But most of us don't. Right? We just accept it as it is. So we should see our stay in this world is a temporary stay. We're here just for a little while, and it's not worth it making so many arrangements for that. The real arrangements should be for going back home, back to the spiritual world. And Krishna says that that person that remembers him at the end of life, he can return to the spiritual world. Says, well, okay, I'll do that. You know, okay, that's a deal. I'll enjoy here my whole life, and at the end I'll remember Krishna. But Krishna says, no. Abhyasi yogi yuktena chitasana nyagamina paramam purusam divyam yati patina sintya. Only by practice. If we practice now, can we remember Krishna at the time of death? And then if we do, then we can return to the spiritual sky. Because whatever we remember at the time of death, whatever mentality we've developed, that will be our next birth. If we think money, 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 then next life will be near the money. And if we think of sex at the time of death, which is still possible, amazing enough, then that's where we'll be headed. So, in this way, let us, somehow or other, cultivate Krishna consciousness. Then, at the end of life, we can return back home, back to Godhead. That is the goal of life. And the easiest method for remembering Krishna and for serving Krishna and for coming to that state where one remembers Krishna at the end of life is by this Sankirtan Yajna. Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalona, Stirna, Stirna, Katiranya. In this age of Kali, it is the process, the only process, for attaining self-realization. So therefore, we are recommending this chanting, Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, as the perfect process for going back to the spiritual world, which is our eternal condition where we belong. Any questions? Any comments? No. Yes.
What form does the soul take?
In the spiritual world? Okay, so it is said that actually the soul already has a form. It already has a body. There is a spiritual body which is now temporarily not manifest to us because our consciousness is covered and therefore we temporarily have no access to that identity. We just can't remember it. It's blocked. But it's already there. So by the process of devotional service, our spiritual body becomes uncovered. So it is said that the spiritual body is made of pure consciousness. It is not made of flesh, blood and bones. It is no different from one's consciousness. And it is very beautiful and effulgent. These kind of bodies are so bright and effulgent. They may be in various colors, right? And there are all kinds of varieties of colors in the spiritual sky. But all these colors are outstanding due to their effulgence. Spiritual bodies are very beautiful. Spiritual bodies are ever youthful. Spiritual bodies are never uncomfortable, not itchy, not hot, not sticky and all these things, or freezing or painful or a spine problem or, you know, you name it. You know what I'm talking about, all those things. So spiritual bodies have no defects. And there is no limit in energy. Okay? As now, you know, like, the material world is the world of the dream. Everyone has a dream, you know, and the dream is this big, and reality is always a little less. Right? That's my father with this compromise, you know. God, can't stand it. But the spiritual world is just the opposite, that reality exceeds the dream. So you have your dream in the spiritual world, and then reality is even greater than that. Right? So the bodies in the spiritual world are also like that. It says, every word is a song, every step is a dance. So it is a great experience of pleasure, which is ever increasing. It says, for example, when there are exchanges between Krishna and his devotees, then just little things have already a lot of meaning. When Srimati Radharani meets Krishna, when Krishna smiles at her, she sees that smile, and that causes her also to smile a little. Krishna picks up that smile, therefore he begins to smile more. And therefore she begins to smile more, and then he smiles more, and therefore she smiles more. And so it's a whole reciprocation. So there everything has deep meaning. And so not like in this world, where everything doesn't have so much meaning. And therefore everything actually is quite empty, and we're always looking for more meaning. Therefore here we go for the gross things immediately. But in the spiritual world, small things have deep meaning. So
do we have a predetermined form?
Yeah. We already have a predetermined form, a predetermined identity. So in Vrindavan, in the spiritual world, there are different positions. Some are cowherd boys, right, with Krishna. Some may be gopis, some may be trees, some may be peacocks, some may be monkeys. Whatever may be, right, it is all there. Yeah. So it is said that actually one already has that identity from before. It can change sometimes by association with certain devotees. One's desire could change, but generally it doesn't, because generally we are very attached to that form. So generally we just uncover the form we already have. So at one point we'll remember who we were. And that's actually what will happen. Yes? I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Does that form change?
Ah, no, it doesn't actually. Even on the heavenly planets, when parents have children, they are immediately mature. And there's no pregnancies like that, you know. The ladies are not going, in the heavenly planets are not going through all that. And there's no childbirth, the children just appear. So in the spiritual world also, the children are, like Krishna is there in the form of a youth. It said in his child form, Krishna appears also in a child. You know that? Yeah, in this world, right? And here he looks like a little baby, and here he goes through the whole thing of teething, and he has very soft little baby hair, round cheeks, and it's all these things. Yeah? He doesn't have that in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, he's always a youth. But to his parents, he's a kid. His parents, they think, oh, he's just a child. But so there's no growing and no children. It's eternally the same. But it's not boring, right? Because it's eternally full of pastimes and growing experience. But sometimes Krishna comes to the material world to go to that growing feature and to show that. And then all his devotees come also from the spiritual world to see that. Right? So even here they have their, they also have their excursions, just like we are having our excursions, you know, you go up to Byron Bay or I don't know where you go. And so Krishna sometimes comes here for a little excursion to this planet. And then he takes their child form. Otherwise, no, otherwise there are no children, they're not growing. But there is parental affection, but mainly directed towards Krishna. Anyway, the spiritual world is it's quite an amazing place. You have everywhere desire trees, and they can give anything you want. But most of the residents don't want anything from these trees but flowers. See, if you would hear, if we want to offer something to Krishna, let us say we are offering a whole nice plate with very nice cooking. Somebody spent hours in the kitchen, obviously, right? And it's a whole lot of work. In the spiritual world, you could just desire it from a tree, and it would all just be there. But nobody does that. Yeah? They would never do that, because they like to cook for Krishna. They're so attached to the service that they just do the service. Therefore, from these desire trees, they only take flowers. But these trees themselves, they can walk, they can move. And they don't walk, it's not that, hey, what's that, a tree, but they can move. Yeah? So they move to different spots, so that they are always there where Krishna is. Krishna is in one part of the forest, certain trees are there. Then they move. The next day, Krishna is in another part of the forest, the trees move there. So these things are all possible. So it's a very different world than this world. And a little difficult to understand for us, because we think according to the limitations of this world. There's no time. There's ever present. So how can there be no time? We cannot understand. So at one point you have to say, well, stop here when you talk about the spiritual world. At one point you have to say, well, we'll see it when we get there.
Raj Roy's theory now that with spirit souls, eternal servants of Lord Krishna, and yeah, aspiring devotees.
Many of us here are dressed up in the full costume, you know, we have the whole attire and everything, but that doesn't really mean that we have changed into residents of the spiritual world, right? Our foot still taps at certain time of music and all these things, right? The material taste is still there. So what to do? How can we conquer all this? We should know that Krishna will help us. So if we just surrender unto Him and we just try to serve Him to the best of our ability, although it we may feel that we are in the middle. We are in the middle. Here is Krishna. There is Maya, the illusory energy. Looks good, but watch out. We are in the middle. We are sometimes serving Krishna, and then we turn around and we do a little Maya. This is our position. What to do? What to do? But we must try to somehow or other continue to serve Krishna. Then Krishna will help us. Yeah, that's it. Krishna will help us. There's that story of the sparrow that lost her eggs in the ocean. And the ocean washed away the eggs of the sparrow. And the sparrow was so determined, I will drink the water of that ocean. The ocean didn't care. What can a sparrow do? But Garuda cared. And when Garuda, who is the bird carrier of Lord Vishnu, who is a spiritual bird, when he saw his little sister bird trying to drink the ocean, Garuda came and Garuda said, I will drink the ocean. Then the ocean is getting a little worried. And so the Varuna, who is the deity of the ocean, appeared there and said to my dear Garuda, please don't do this. What can we do for you? Return the eggs. Yes, Mr. Garuda. Right away, Mr. Garuda. Here they are. Right? And so the sparrow got the eggs. So we are the sparrow. We are the sparrow. We try to drink the ocean. Conquering our material desires is trying to drink the ocean. It's impossible, but we are sincerely trying to do it. Krishna will be attracted by our sincerity. He will help us then. And then when he starts to help us, suddenly everything becomes possible. And that is how it actually works, spiritual life. It works, it depends on Krishna. So therefore we try to somehow or other please Krishna. Make a sacrifice for Krishna. Now we struggle, we do difficult things for Krishna. By doing that, Krishna becomes very indebted. Like there's a nice reference about Draupadi, who was brought in the assembly of the Kurus, and they tried to pull off her sari in public. Draupadi was a great devotee, she was praying to the Lord, protect me, but she was holding with two hands onto the sari at the same time. But then she could see, what's the point? All these big, powerful men are going to try and pull this off. What will I do? So she just threw up her hands in the sky and called up, hey, Govinda! And at that time, Krishna, he felt so indebted, you know, that she just in such a difficult situation, with full faith, took shelter of him, that he was remembering that. And even later, much later, Krishna said, every time that I remember how at that time Draupadi was taking shelter of me, I feel so indebted. I just feel that my debt to her is growing. So Krishna remembers every service we do, and with time his feeling of debt towards his devotee is growing. There you go. So this is pretty good. Therefore, a sacrifice made for Krishna is never lost. Never. Never. Krishna remembers. He's got a better memory than we have. And as he's remembering, his feeling of being indebted is increasing. This is very nice. So Krishna will help us. Alright, so I thank you very much for listening this evening. And so this week, for those of you who are not aware, there is a special festival week, and every evening different leaders of our movement are speaking. Prahladananda Swami already came and spoke. My name is Kadambakanana Swami. I am from Holland originally, and just now touring Australia a little bit. Tomorrow, His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj will be here. He is one of the senior most members of our movement, a long-standing sannyasi and spiritual master, of course, quite famous and known to most of you. So definitely you should come back tomorrow night and not miss that occasion. It is quite rare that people of such caliber come, and when they are there, one can really get a lot of in-depth understanding and a lot of in-depth mercy, so it's quite important. So, if somehow or other possible, please attend the various programs this week. If somehow or other you can't make it tomorrow, again on Sunday, Tamal Krishna Maharaj will also give the lecture, and then you are also welcome. So, once again, thank you very much. I'll end with this. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sukadev Goswami said, to liberating in this way, Kamsa, although determined to continue in enmity toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead, refrained from the vicious killing monster. He decided to wait until the Lord was born and then do what was needed. There's no purport, text 24. Asina sambhisamstistan bunjana paryatan mahim chintayana rishikesham apasyatan mayam jagat. Translation. While sitting on his throne, or in a sitting room, while lying on his bed, or indeed, while situated anywhere and while eating, sleeping or walking, Kamsa saw only his enemy, the Supreme Lord Rishikesh. In other words, by thinking of his all-pervading enemy, Kamsa became unfavorably Krishna conscious. Purport. Srila Rupa Goswami has described the finest pattern of devotional service as anakulyena Krishna nusilanam, or cultivating Krishna consciousness favorably. Kamsa, of course, was also Krishna conscious, but because he regarded Krishna as his enemy, even though he was fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, his Krishna consciousness was not favorable for his existence. Krishna consciousness, favorably cultivated, makes one completely happy, so much so that a Krishna conscious person does not consider Kaivalya Sukham, or merging into the existence of Krishna, to be a great gain. Kaivalyam narakayate. For a Krishna conscious person, even merging into the existence of Krishna or Brahman, as impersonalists aspire to do, is uncomfortable. Kaivalyam narakayate tridasa pura kasa pushvayate. Karmis hanker to be promoted to the heavenly planets, but a Krishna conscious person considers such a promotion a will of the wisp, good for nothing. Durandindriya kala sarpa patali pruktatam strayate. Yogis try to control their senses and thus become happy, but a Krishna conscious person neglects the methods of yoga. He is unconcerned with the greatest of enemies, the senses, which are compared to snakes. For a Krishna conscious person who is cultivating Krishna consciousness favorably, the happiness conceived by the karmis, jnanis and yogis is treated as less than a fig. Kamsa, however, because of cultivating Krishna consciousness in a different way, that is, inimically, was uncomfortable in all the affairs of his life. Whether sitting, sleeping, walking or eating, he was always in danger. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. A non-devotee or atheist also cultivates God consciousness by trying to avoid God in everything. For example, so-called scientists who want to create life by a combination of chemicals regard the external material elements as supreme. Such scientists do not like the idea that life is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. As clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mamayavamsu Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta. The living entities do not arise from a combination of material elements such as earth, water, fire and air, but are separated portions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one can understand the position of the living entity as a separated portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by studying the nature of the living entity, one can understand the nature of the Supreme Godhead. Since the living entity is a fragmental sample of the Godhead, but because atheists are not interested in God consciousness, they try to be happy by cultivating Krishna consciousness in various unfavorable ways. Although Kamsa was always absorbed in thoughts of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was not happy. A devotee, however, sitting on a throne or beneath a tree is always happy. Srila Rupa Goswami resigned from office as a government minister to sit beneath a tree, yet he was happy. Jagta tunam masesa mandala patisrenim sada tuchavat. Sat Goswami Astika 4. He did not care for his comfortable position as minister. He was happy even beneath a tree in Vrindavan, favorably serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. For a non-devotee, the world is full of problems. Whereas for a devotee, the entire world is full of happiness. Vishvam puna sukhayate vidhi mahindra dischakitayate yat karunya kataksha vaibhavatam tam goram evastuma chitanya chandam prita 95. This comfortable position of a devotee can be established by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yasmin stito nadukena guru napi vichalyate. Bhagavad Gita 6:22. Even when a devotee is superficially put into great difficulty, he is never disturbed. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Saradhyaya Takshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah.